This episode of The Yarn is sponsored by Heinemann and their professional book, The Artful Read-Aloud, 10 Principles to Inspire, Engage, and Transform Learning.
Ms. Rebecca?
Hi, is this Colby?
Colby talked with author Rebecca Bellingham about the book.
It's an ode to the importance of read-aloud, but it's more than that. It's also really helping teachers to build a bridge between sort of the artistic world and how we do read-aloud in the classroom and the moves that we can make that can really elevate the power, the instructional power, and the engagement power of read-aloud. So it's not really a book about why it's important. It's more a book about how we can do it in deeply engaging ways that really serve the needs of kids as readers, but also as human beings and creative thinkers, and serve the needs of our community.
If you work with kids, you know how special read-aloud time can be. The Artful Read-Aloud will help you make your story times unforgettable. Visit Heinemann.com to learn more and order a copy.
Hi, I'm Bob Shea, and I'm going to be talking about a book called Unicorn is Maybe Not So Great After All. And it's from Hyperion.
Welcome to The Yarn, a school library journal production. I'm Travis Yonker. Is there anyone out there making funnier picture books than Bob Shea? Because I don't think so. I sat down with Bob at Nerd Camp this past summer to talk about the making of Unicorn is Maybe Not So Great After All, the sequel to his read-aloud classic, Unicorn Thinks He's Pretty Great. And to top it all off, Bob shared the funniest author visit story I've ever heard. So let's get to it. It's time to unravel The Unicorn Books by Bob Shea.
My son was probably around 7 at the time, and I was taken to soccer practice. And on the way to soccer practice, there was a house that had goats in the yard, and goats are very unfortunate-looking animals. Like, if you see them, you're like, wow, that's... They didn't get a lot of the good things. Like, well, they're goats, but they can fly or whatever. Like, they're just goats. And then when I got to soccer practice, all the kids at 7 were focused on this one kid. His name was Jeffrey. Oh, Jeffrey's the best at soccer, and Jeffrey does this. And already kids were dividing into groups of that's the best kid at this, and I'm not as good as this. And I'm like, you're all 7. You're all just running around in circles out there. How is he any better? And then I thought about the goats, and I was like, well, what would the opposite of a goat be? Like, what's the worst thing that could happen to a goat is for a unicorn to show up, and that's really where the idea for that came. Well, you know, in Unicorn is Maybe Not So Great After All, you have a unicorn who's pretty amazing thing to be a unicorn, right? So, but he was amazing when he first came to school, so now he's been at school for a year, and, you know, people have moved on to something else. So that's it. So he's trying to get his original enthusiasm back for him, and he goes a little too far. I had been thinking about it for a while, and I had wanted to do a sequel to the first book for a long time because I like the characters a lot. And so I sent an idea for a sequel that was very sketched out. It was very tight to my editor, Stephanie Lurie. And she said, I love this. I love everything about it, except for the story and the artwork. Besides those two things, she basically was like, yes, let's make a unicorn sequel. We're not making this. So in that case, it was a similar plot line where a unicorn sort of lost his luster to his friends. He was yesterday's news, and sort of, he just was one of their friends. There was nothing negative. He just was, all right, now you're just one of our friends. We see every day. We're not going to flip out over you. But he was in his Citizen Kane-style mansion, like locked away from everybody with like 5 o'clock shadow and red eyes. And there was cups of microwave glitter everywhere. And he's rereading Unicorn Thinks He's Pretty Great to relive his glory days. And it was sort of like a lost weekend kind of thing. And my editor was like, yeah, we're not doing this. But I rewrote it to make more sense in that context. And another thing is I had him shift time a lot. I had him do a lot of flashbacks, which I learned through the process that that's not such a great idea for kids, because I had to make the story linear, or that they would get confused if I kept jumping around in time. Well, I hope that they can, and I found that with, especially with Unicorn Thinks He's Pretty Great, I hope they can relate to it. And so that's always the core idea comes from that, comes from some sort of human experience that we can, that hopefully everyone can relate to, and then the challenge is to write that in a sort of be funny about it. Write it in a funny way and in a unique way, so you're not just like, oh, here's a very direct way to say this thing that's not interesting at all. Like, make that interesting and sort of not make it like, not hit people over the head with it. Coming up with the idea, so the idea of a unicorn coming to school, that's like 1% of anything. And then it's, all right, now how are you going to do this? Because there's a million ways to tackle it after you come up with that idea. So in the first book, I did it, I tried to do things traditionally. So I was doing like watercolors, and I had all these watercolors out and colored pencils and pens, and I was just throwing everything at it. But keeping it very graphic too. I like very graphic things. So everything was very flat, tried to make it as flat as I could, and used a lot of different mediums. So there's a lot of texture on the page. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of things to look at. And that's really hard. It's like really hard to do that. It takes a lot of time, and it's a lot of like going in the next day and going, I can't use anything I did yesterday. It's terrible. So I did the second one. I did, my initial sketches were in pencil, but then I did it. I did that one digitally, and I sort of tightened everything up because I was used to drawing things a little bit more now. So, and this one is like super, I guess, I don't know, that's a little technical, but I think they used a 7-color process. So it's like super, super vibrant for the second one. I like to get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and then I work for a little bit. I get a couple hours of work in, or that's when I'll like try to like do yoga or exercise and get that out of the day, so that when I procrastinate the rest of the day, I'm like, well, you exercised. you got that thing done. So, and then I'll get my son off to school. And then when I go into work, probably around 9 o'clock, and then I work around probably till noon, where you can keep doing creative things. And then I'm burnt out. Like, creatively, you can't really, it's not anything it gives you, you're just going to redo the next day. So in the afternoon, I usually do some illustration or clean up or answer emails and stuff like that. And then I'm home at 6. But it's a regular day. It's like a job. So I'm trying to make my studio into my high school bedroom, because even though my output wasn't that great aesthetically, like when you look at it, it was the time I thought when it was really like, it was such a nice creative day that it was, I could just sit there all day and draw and make something, and I was sort of in the zone, and time would fly by. It would be the end of the day before I knew it, and I was like, I could really do that now. A ton of people don't email me, and I have a studio that's away from my house, and I could recreate that. So that's what I've been trying to do. I got a turntable, and I have all my records from high school, and I'm adding to the collection, and I just listen to records and maybe turn on a radio. I have a desktop radio that I listen to, and try to keep out any social media and the internet. Well, with school visits, I feel like I was talking to somebody about this just the other day. I'm glad the kids think I'm a celebrity. And the reason I'm glad to think that they think I'm celebrity is so that I can make them feel important. Because I was always like, oh, well, you know, I'm just some guy who draws books in a room. They shouldn't get that excited about it. But then when I go in there and they are excited, I'm like, well, I can make you feel special with that, because this guy who's so important came and he brought me up on stage and he told me my writing was good and he told me I drew well or whatever. So I really use that. I leverage that misconception that they have that I'm important to make them feel good. You know what I mean? So that's how it plays out in a visit. So I got invited to my old elementary school, and they didn't know that I had gone there. They just called me, and I was like, oh, Stony Point Elementary. Okay, and I didn't tell them. And I think by the time I showed up, they sort of figured it out. And my dad was still living there at the time. And I stayed in my old bedroom. I got up. I walked to school the same way I had when I was a kid, wheeling my cart of stuff. I got to the school. It smelled the same. It looked the same. The wall colors were the same. I was so excited to be there that I went nuts. And I was just like making things up, and the kids were laughing, and it was great. But what happened at the end, I started to lose them a little bit, because they knew, they were like, this guy is having so much fun that there's no way that he has any authority over us. You know what I mean? Because I was jumping off stage and going, right here in this cafeteria, when I was in second grade, Michael Freeman reached across the table, crushed my Snicker bar, and I cried. And I said, and on my way home, I'm going to stop by 2 Snickers bars and get really, really sick. And they were like, what is he talking about? And I was naming girls I had crushes on, and I was just reliving my whole experience, and the teachers are cracking up. But that day when I went in, I said to them, I said, you know, I'd really love to go in the teacher's lounge, because when you're a kid, you're not allowed in there, and I want to see what it is. And they're like, yeah, okay. So then when I went in the teacher's lounge, they had all these cakes in there, like cake, and they're having a little party, and like cups and soda, and there was even balloons or whatever and stuff. I'm like, wow, this is great. So I took a bunch of pictures of it. And then at the end of my last session, and the kids are going nuts, they're going crazy, I don't know how they could even get them out of there, I said, do you guys want to see what goes on in the teacher's lounge while you're in class? And they were like, yeah, yeah. And then I was like, I went in there and I found out. And then I projected on the thing 60 feet across, the sheet cake. I was like, cake, they have cake in there while you're in class. Every day they have this, every day. The next thing was like bowls and bowls of candy. They're eating candy. All the kids, I could have said, let's march down there and get some, and all the kids would have got up and left. So then the vice principal comes on stage and takes the microphone from me. She goes, now, you know, we don't have that every day. That was a celebration we were having. And I'm behind her screaming to the crowd, she's lying to you. What else is she going to say? They don't want you to know. And then they started to crowd control and start leading everybody out. But then I was like, I just messed up real bad. And they were super nice to me. They're like, oh, that was really fun. Thank you. And I signed books, and it was a nice day. And I walked home the same way, like went home from a day at school. Saw my dad and was like, how'd it go? Told him about my day at school. It's chaos.
Thank you, Bob Shea, for the interview. Thank you, Philip Stead, for creating our theme music. Additional music for this episode from the Free Music Archive. Have an idea for the show? You can contact us via email at theyarnpodcast@gmail.com and visit us online at the School Library Journal website. I'm Travis Yonker. Thanks for listening.